It is the 26th of July 2009. My name is Rohan Mukherjee. I am with Dr. Jayanta Madhav, former advisor to the Chief Minister of Assam. Dr. Madhav, could I ask you to start off by providing a short introduction of yourself and your role in the government of Assam in the recent past?
I am an economist by training, from PhD from London School of Economics. I essentially worked abroad with the Asian Development Bank, and then later on I worked here in various other organizations in India promoting banks and financial institutions and whatnot. And later on, from 2003 onwards till early 2009, I was with the government of Assam as the Chief Minister's advisor. It's an honorary post, and that's the link with the government as far as I'm concerned.
And could you talk a little bit about your role and responsibilities as the advisor to the Chief Minister?
Essentially, there are two parts to it. In the first term, that was between 2002 and 2007, that was, I was the advisor to the Chief Minister. And whatever advice he sought, or I thought that it is required from my side, particularly on the economic and financial area, and that's what I used to give him. In the second term, that was from, say, 2007 to early 2009, that was a specific assignment as far as the advisorship is concerned. And that was for particularly a generation of employment in the state of Assam. And we devised in my earlier term, we produced a scheme called a Mission to Generate Employment in the State of Assam, which was approved by the Planning Commission. It's a fairly large, big scheme, and it is being implemented now. And I was giving advice on how to implement that one, and in the second term of my office.
Correct. So as an advisor to the government, you would have seen at close quarters how the government functioned and what its priorities must have been. So could I ask you to think back to the initial days when you began your position as an advisor? What were the major challenges and issues facing the government when it started this project of reform?
You see, I have been, although I hadn't worked as an advisor prior to 2003, but I was associated with Assam from, say, 1994 onwards, after I come back from abroad. So I had seen the government, and during also earlier term, that is Mr. Prafulla Mahanta's time, that's the Assam Gana Parishad's time, I was invited to do a number of reports. One was on industry, one was on finance, etc. So I had seen what the government was and what the reforms are required, even prior to that one. But by the time I assumed the responsibility as an advisor, there is already a lot of talks have already been taken place about the government reforms, particularly the Asian Development Bank and World Bank got into it, and they also started having a dialogue with the government of Assam on the various reform possibilities. And you are asking me about the priorities. Number one priority is the government's own reforms. The reforms in the systems. And I think that is the most important thing. We have been following the old, somewhat archaic, the British government days systems. And in fact, during the AGP time, the system was really, because of the systems, we were practically, the government was really in a state of, in a flux kind of a thing, particularly on the finances. And there was a time when the Reserve Bank would be open only 5 to 6 days in a month for the government to withdraw its money. Such were the times. Since Tarun Gogoi has come, I think he saw to it. I think he has a good grasp about the systems, particularly because he had worked, unlike all other chief ministers prior to him, he has worked in central government. He was a minister, minister of state in the Union government, Delhi. So therefore, he understood what are the problems there. He had a fairly good grasp of the systems. So he initiated, soon after that, a few things. By that time, of course, when he took over, the central government has also come under the different reform procedures, both at their own instance, and also the instances of the lending institutions. And one of them was the fiscal FRBM, Fiscal Responsibility and Budget Management Bill, which I was asked to author that for Government of Assam. And I would say that that's a very critical piece of legislation which we brought. And this is the only legislation where I don't think any other government in India has that particular clause that if you violate any one of those critical rules, you may be subjected to legal procedures. But we diligently, I think, followed that. As a result of that, and the first improvement in the reform procedure was the better financial conditions. And now, as a result of all those, and also introductions, also reforms in the taxations and other procedures, and this Government of Assam's financial position has considerably improved. And there is no really ban as far as the Reserve Bank is concerned, that only for that many days we can open for you.
And
yeah, sorry.
No.
You were also asking about the that was the, I was talking about the financial, in the finances. But the other reform which is critically needed is, as I was about to tell you, is that the systems which we are working on, essentially the same old systems. In my opinion, this is not suited for development-oriented system. Development requires far more, little bit more open, and more, shall we say, it's speedy decision-making system. You can say no, but say no quickly, whatever the program or projects may be. But that system, unfortunately, hasn't occurred as in Government of Assam. I think, in my opinion, that is very critical.
And so, in the financial realm, you spoke of the FRBM Act. Were there any other reforms that came about?
Sure. I mean, first of all, of course, we had also given during my time, or during just before my time, but I was associated on that one, about the government's financial system, the finances. It was a big report, and I understand you will be meeting Haren Das today, tomorrow or so. He will also talk about it because he was the chairman of that one. I was a member there. Dr. Atul Sharma, who is now the Finance Commission's member there, he was also a member there. We had actually given the government of Assam a very voluminous report on the entire financial system, essentially on the tax part of it. And some were implemented, many of them have not, for whatever compulsions the government of Assam had.
And was there anything in common between the reforms that were implemented, of the ones you recommended? Was it that they were easier to implement or that they were...
Well, the most difficult was the fiscal responsibility and budget management one. Because it gives you a particular specific target that you cannot cross this target, which diligently, first if you accept, of course now, I mean now even government of India hasn't followed because of the recession and the compulsion that one has to really have some deficit financing. That's because of that, it may be some relaxations may occur this year. But other than that, it was basically followed more or less. I would say one of the problems in this kind of democracy is that the party, particularly the chief minister, who is really the helm of the party, although there might be someone else as a chairman of the Congress party, but it is his tenure which will speak about the Congress party's performance. So therefore, he sees to it that a lot of money goes on popular schemes. I think probably here Mr. Gogoi has devised probably hundreds of schemes in different areas. These are needed, but one has to see whether we have different priorities than this. You name it, we have a scheme for that one. And he does it, but then later on, sometimes because of the financial constraint, it tapers off. That's another problem.
So what do you think is the purpose of all these schemes that he has launched?
Schemes are twofold, actually. These are, as I say, these are needy. For example, for the specific ones are for the women's, are specific ones for children's, one for the tribals. I mean, all kinds of, I mean, hundreds of other schemes you have here. These are outside the scope of the Government of India schemes. These are more specifically targeted schemes. For example, all the class 10 students will get a computer. Those who have come after the first divisions, they will all get the computers. All the class 9 girl students will get cycles. And many of the, many some women's will get all of them sewing machines, all kinds of schemes. I mean, you name it, we have a scheme for that. So one is, of course, these are needy. He's looking at a specific target groups. The second thing is, of course, the popularity. I mean, let's admit that if he can serve all kinds of these different people. At least some point of time, they will remember that I got a swing missing, I got a cycle. I got a radio. I got a the various other things. So obviously, it's a popular thing, and he will get a vote.
So, and do these popular schemes also extend not just to children, ladies, or tribals, but also to different ethnic groups or different religious communities?
Yeah, it does. I mean, even minorities. I mean, he has a scheme for minorities. He has a scheme for the tribals. He has a during his time also, I think another six. What do we call that? You see, Assam has a peculiar governance system. I think this is the only one probably which has in India that kind of governance system. Assam is is under like any other state. You have the assembly. We do not have a second chamber, although there is a movement to have a second chamber, but we have an assembly there. And so the assembly and the ministers and the governor of Assam. But we have two districts here, that is the Karbi Yanglong Autonomous Districts, and then the North Kachar Hills Autonomous Districts, which are governed under the constitution. It's a separate governance system. Then under, of course, we have, similarly, we have given to Boro. It's not really autonomous system just as in the case of Karbi Yanglong. It's slightly different, but it is, again, Boro Land Territorial Development Council. So that's another. And then besides that, we have six. Another, like Missing, Missing Development Council, the Kachari, the Tiwa, all kinds of, there are six other different councils are there. So the governance system is somewhat not same as that of any other state in India.
Do you think that the creation of these councils was necessary to some extent because of the assertion of various ethnic identities in Assam, so that the government could more easily push forward its reforms as it's doing them without being bogged down by various demands?
You see, this was essentially, as far as I can remember, it was Gopinath Bordoloi, who was then the, what we call the premier at that time, chief minister, who really pushed for this, that the tribals are they have a different sort of governance altogether, and therefore they are not quite well equipped with it. Let us keep their governance system as it is. But then tribals were not only in Assam, and tribals were in Bihar, tribals Madhya Pradesh, the UP, all over other places tribals are there. You have the Odisha, etc. But then it was chosen as these two autonomous districts. And of course, at that time, Arunachal, Arunachal was Arunachal. Arunachal wasn't there at that time. It was northwest, northeast frontier tract. Arunachal, Nagaland, Manipur, of course, at that time was a princely state. Later on, it joined the government of India. And so is Tripura, and then Mizoram. Mizoram was like the other ones. So these states had again a peculiar situations. So they were governed under a separate one. Within the governor of Assam was responsible. So we had a number of systems within the state of Assam. That was one peculiarity we had, and it has created, in my opinion, a lot of problems. That was with a good intent. Idea was that they can develop in their own ingenuity and with their own time, and so let us not interfere on their affairs. That was a good intent, but I think that has created hell of a lot of problem for us. A, there is lots of demand for that autonomous councils, like similar states, state within state. Because there is a lot of autonomy as far as the money goes from government of India, comes to Assam, and Assam directly sends it. But if you see the development, it's absolutely shameful. There is hardly any development in last 50 years. Even they have the autonomy to do that. They might say that, look, my 100 crore is not good enough. That's maybe true. But that 100 crore is not even been spent properly. So, in order to get, it's a vested interest, or shall we say elite, who really is really the same families in both in North Kachar Hills. It's four families in North Kachar Hills. And a few families in the Karbi Angalong. They are the one, for the last 50 years, they've been are the main people who are elected there, and they are the one who are governing that. They are the one who are really making siphoning all this money instead of really spending to the populations.
But why do you think that Mr. Tarun Gogoi set up six more in his time when so many chief ministers before him did not do that? Why do you think he thought that that was the right time to?
Well, this is of course with a difference. These are giving them, for example, the Tiwa, for example, the Tengal Kachari. These are of course, they were demands for this one, to satisfy the popular demand. I mean, that's a vote bank politics is there. One cannot really say it is not there. But with a difference that the control is not that much. I mean, here control is there. But there, Assam government's control is hardly there in the two autonomous districts. But even then, I would say these are wrong moves. We should be one India. And one India, and there's a one law for everybody. If he is poor, underprivileged, uneducated, or unhealthy, then we need to help them. There is no question of that, whether he is a Muslim, that's why we need to help him. If he is a Tengal Kachari, or if he is a Boro, that he needs to be helped. Because there are rich people in the boroughs, there are rich people in the Tengal Kachari, there are rich people in the Muslims. So it is, I think it is, the criteria should be, in my opinion, it is the underprivileged, the uneducated, poor, and those other, a few other criteria.
And so do you think that, as you mentioned, you know, the development money that goes into these autonomous councils rarely ever reaches the intended?
I wouldn't say rarely. I mean, I would say largely do not reach that. Development there is very poor. I mean, the development record is both these districts are very poor.
Do you think that what, apart from electoral gains, what do you think that there was any motive in the government to build support for the reform efforts that they had by setting up more autonomous councils, or was it purely for votes? Was there a sense of getting support for their agenda by doing this?
You see, there's a movement there. This movement, because there will be more movement, because there are now Kamatapur means Koch Rajbangsis. They want actually part of Assam and part of West Bengal up to Jalpaiguri, Alipurduar Jalpaiguri, because that was the old Kutch. Yeah. They are demanding that. So there are no end to it. I mean, because they think that they can cater to their people well. But it is a few people who really runs all these things. This is where it is. And that is not really a solution. India cannot be divided piece by piece, piece by piece like that. And idea is that why is they have to ask for it? A, they think they cannot get jobs. And they think they are poor. I mean, it's in reality. I mean, these are things that are poor. They do not get jobs, not properly educated. They have no skills. These are the fault of the government itself, that we haven't been able to give them those things. If they are, they think that they are equally competent with any other Assamese or any other Bengalis, then these things wouldn't arise.
So in terms of the actual reform package that the Tarun Gogoi government tried to introduce, was there widespread support for the moves that they wanted to take, or did they have to actually build support for the reforms in particular?
No. Mostly, there was no opposition as such, because some of the reforms were internal, that is, internal to the government. So it has, in fact, there was support for that. I mean, if it is an internal for the government, and if it really helps the... Yeah. But then again, as I said, the big problem is the systems within the government has not really... I mean, only reforms is on basically on the a little in the finance side.
But even in changing the systems of government, one does need to reorient the bureaucracy and the civil service to a great extent to change the attitudes or the incentives that face different individuals in the government. Did the government have that kind of a problem?
That is the main problem. As I said, there are two parts of the reform. It's a one-year scheme. And if it takes about 9 months to start a one-year scheme, it calls that something is wrong somewhere, that within the government the systems are not up to it. That is the archaic systems which we are following from the olden days, which were control-oriented. We need some development-oriented with certain amount of control. Not losing the control, but at the same time the emphasis should be development. Because after all, we have a hell of a lot of money now. We got to spend. The criticisms that mostly you will see from the Auditor General or so, that we haven't been able to spend money.
So in building support for the government, say, you mentioned that the Chief Minister started a lot of schemes. Now, in a society as diverse as Assam, was it considered important to represent different parts of the community in these schemes, different groups? As you mentioned, there's a scheme for everyone. But
well, once you start that, if you do for a tribal, you got to do for somebody else also, scheduled caste, scheduled tribes, and then minorities. You have to do that because you cannot just leave that.
But there is also this, there is some people who argue that in trying to represent too many sections of society, you compromise your ability to actually carry out reforms because, you know, it slows things down.
These were actually not reform per se. Don't confuse with that one. It was AIDS helping them to come up to a level. It was money given, for example, for schooling and etc. It was not really reform per se.
Yes,
reform is normally is related to a system. But here systems, we didn't tinker with the systems. Apart from a few, I mean.
And it seems that the government had sort of built up a good amount of public support through these popular schemes. What do you think in the future could cause this level of support to diminish? What do you think are the challenges for the government in maintaining this level of support?
Well, first of all, of course, you see, Assam's finances has improved considerably. Partly, it is the VAT regime. VAT regime has brought a lot of money. And also, money from the central government has also increased quite substantially. What is a proper division of finance as far as the finance commission is concerned? And apart from that, also money has come quite a number of things. So that gave it is a leverage to the chief minister to work on all these different programs. He must be congratulated for doing that. Must also say, the chief minister generally approachable. I mean, obviously, all chief ministers have problems of time. Within his budgeted time, if he can find some time, he's approachable. Two, he was outward looking, he's not an inward looking. And on three, that he worked as a central minister down there, that gave him a big confidence, and also he knows how the central government works, so he can get money also from here.
So in terms of the public support, do you think that in the future too many schemes might be a problem in maintaining this level of public support?
Well, the chief minister himself will find it difficult. I'm not critical about the too many schemes. What I'm saying that, I think, as I said, my idea of tackling things are four or five different criteria. As I said, is poor. You don't have to really help the rich, poor. The second one is uneducated, bring them to a level. Third was underprivileged, whether they are discriminated. That's another one. And then there are whether unhealthy, if he's not a healthy person, bring them to a level. So, these should be the ones rather than tackling all these different, if I were the chief minister. Let me put it that way.
Yes.
And fortunately, I'm not a chief minister, and I'm not, responsible to the public, and I'm not asking for votes. So he has a different concern altogether. So therefore, his concerns will be somewhat different.
So now, in thinking about your role as an advisor to the chief minister again, it's been observed in other parts of the world that often reform efforts get caught in certain kinds of traps. They can't get out of them. And I would just like to know, I'd like to lay out a few scenarios for you and ask you if these situations applied in Assam and if there were any efforts at all to tackle these situations. The first one that we often can encounter is patronage, that many leaders face pressures to provide jobs to certain sections of society or difficult, more vocal sections, some factions in their party. And this may compromise the pace of reform, yet they are necessary to move along, because without doing so, you can't move along. So was this something that the government faced?
No, this was so earlier. But I think this Tarun Gogoi government, particularly Tarun Gogoi, saw to it that because there were a lot of court cases already the previous regimes and things like that. Even in Tone Gogoi is also, there are some cases. Just now recently, the ACS, Assam Civil Services, the selections have been withheld now because they have gone to the court thinking that there are problems there. But in any case, what I wanted to say, that I think Gogoi has realized that this is a problem area. And in his regime, I would say, there is a, I wouldn't say eradicated, but would probably be is a much less. But he cannot control all. There are other autonomous also district level, etc. There are ministers who is not equally sensitive about this. So therefore, it happened.
And why do you what specific steps do you think he's taken to make this
happen? Because he does not approve, he doesn't do it himself. As far as I know it, I mean, I could be wrong also. He also urges the other people also not to do it. But some ministers does it. I mean, you can't help it.
And this may not be so applicable in the financial area, but certainly in say, maintaining law and order or improving the law and order situation, often there are vested interests in the system, say militant groups or criminal groups, etc., who are opposed to the improvement of governance or the improvement of law and order. Has the government faced such resistance in trying to improve law and order, or even in other areas, in trying to deliver services in the countryside? Often you hear that, you know, when an infrastructure project is being built, the militants target that because it means the reach of the state is diminished in that area. So.
No, that's... you see, let me put it this way. The development is stalled in quite a number of places. And here also, let me put it this way, in Assam as a whole, for the last 30 years, there's hardly any big investment from outside. And in fact, till Tarun Gogoi's days, I would say probably 2004, 2003, 2002 or so, hardly any investments here. There is Alpha movement is there. There is not only Alpha, there is all other subsidiary movements are there, all over. The bans were frequent, as even now the bans are very frequent. And the power system has not improved. Acute shortage of power. We haven't been able to. So therefore, there is not hardly any industries. I mean, apart from whatever it is, or some small minor industries are there. No major industries have come. No outsiders have come, basically. It's the, if at all, it is the Marwaris who left during the heydays of the insurgencies, left to Calcutta, left to Delhi. They have still a relationship here. They are the one who are coming and set up some smaller industries here. So therefore, that is there. That problem still exists there. Alpha has a different agenda. So has Karbi Anglong and etc. Though, and also they do not like government to succeed, because if government succeeds and people are happy, obviously they have hardly any constituency.
And has the government been able to tackle this problem at all?
Well, Alpha has become a little bit, by its own, because Alpha is not the same as used to be in the 70s, 80s, 90s. And in the last 10 years, Alpha is not, hasn't got, Alpha itself, they have moved themselves out of Assam, and control is not there. A part of Alpha has, they want to negotiate with the government, And similarly, Boros have come out of it. And Karbi Anglong has still, the North Kachar has still a problem, but there is also feelers for it. But then there are all kinds of groups are there. There is not one group now. There are hundreds of other groups there. They create. I mean, if somebody gives a bund, be it a small organization, it succeeds because people are afraid to go out. And once the bunds are so frequent, that what development can you expect?
But has the diminished role of the Alpha or the Accord with the Boros or other movements, the major movements sort of diminishing, has that been a result of state action or has that been a result of autonomous decisions made by these organizations to come out of militancy and enter a more mainstream role?
Alpha, of course, we haven't. I mean, there is no negotiations with Alpha. It is only a group of people. People's representative, some consultative group or something, PCC or something like that. They thought they were representing the Alpha and they were discussing three times with the government of India. Nothing came out of it because the government of India also thought that they were not really the mouthpiece of Alpha. But in the 90s or 90s, I think the people will not dare to go out after 9 o'clock in the streets. But here up to 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the night you go, the restaurants are open up to 1 o'clock or so. So life is normal as in New York. So therefore that part has gone. Although occasional bombing is there, occasional life is there. That's a part of life now. That we have to reduce.
And so when you say the government's efforts, do you mean in terms of security measures or do you mean in terms of opening up the space for talks with these
both
people?
And settlement. Boro is partly settled. Of course, in Boro there is one group which hadn't settled it, NDFB. So that creates occasional problems. And Alpha, of course, is still there, but a large group, 27 battalion or whatever it is, in the Upper Assam, they have more or less came to a ceasefire, and they are watching. Of course, they are a little bit discontented because things are not moving. At the same time, other small are there. I mean, and new groups are growing also.
All right. Now, you mentioned this a little bit earlier about democratic societies, and even in the case of the Public Service Commission in Assam and the court cases, etc., that you mentioned. Now, in a diverse setting where there are many different social groups, there is a sense when there are competitive processes like elections or like competitive entrance exams to the civil service, there is a sense that those who win these competitions somehow can aggregate all the benefits to the exclusion of other groups, if you see what I mean. There's a sort of winner-take-all sense to competitive processes in polarized settings. Has the government tried to manage this kind of situation in Assam? Has it faced problems? I mean, the court cases are clearly one symptom of that.
The court cases have previous also. I mean, under this new called Assam Civil Service, I think it's called Assam Civil Service Commission. The previous one had more trouble than this one. Partly it is corruption, simple corruption. And also the government and the ministers, every minister wants to push their people. That's also because after all they have to satisfy their constituency. Things to a much, I mean, I would say it is reduced, that kind of a thing, then about 7-8 years ago, 6-7 years ago. But then we still have the problems because A, Number one, corruption is there. It is only a matter, corruption is everywhere, even in England, parliament and ministership, and US is more or less the same. So, I mean, corruption is everywhere. Maybe we have more, I don't know. Indonesia used to be very, so was Philippines, I lived in Philippines. Because, of course, state election system is so that you have to spend so much. How do you recover that money? So their corruption is there.
Again, we touched a little bit on the Chief Minister's own background in the central government and his experience in governance over there. But what do you think it is about his personal management style that helps him succeed in the reforms that he has made successful where others were not able to succeed before him?
Yeah, I think he, because of his, shall we say, of course, don't forget, first of all, he himself is a lawyer. Of course, many others are all equally, I mean, all other pastors, has good degrees. I think Assam had... I would say Assam probably has the pride that all our chief ministers were fairly good educated. And besides that, he was in he was a lawyer, and then he went to the central government, and had some experience in central government. And he himself, nobody can say that he is personally corrupt. I don't think any paper has ever written anything about him. Besides, actually, he has no, what do you call, constituency. That is, like others, some wife, children, but his children are out and well-placed, and his wife is a very low-key person. And so therefore, one cannot really say the chief minister is a... So that gives him a good image and authority. And he is, of course, amongst the peers. He is a little bit, I mean, he had a one step ahead of amongst the peers because of his central government ambitions. And he was also with Rajiv Gandhi at one time. And when he started this, all these different schemes and different initiatives, the commissions, missions, and etc. There were very little resistance about it as far as the government is concerned. People, of course, welcomed that. So therefore, because people wanted a change. Whether he has been able to implement all, that's another question.
And do you think that it's important as a reformer for him to have and to articulate a vision for Assam, for where he wants to take Assam? And has he done this? Has he articulated to you as an advisor or to the public his vision for where he wants Assam to go?
Well, yes and no. Of course, we have a Northeast vision document, which is Manishankar Iyer has prepared, where I also worked there. Then, of course, Manishankar Iyer asked everybody, every state of the North, to prepare a vision document of its own, which is consistent with that, the main vision document for the North, which we prepared. And these are, in my opinion, is only for public purposes. Maybe, yeah. But he has his own kind of a vision document. Vision. Whether he has been able to, shall we say, publicize or communicate to the people is another matter. But he has his own kind of a priorities, and he does things according to the priorities. But if you say that whether he has written all those these down for next 5 years, I would probably say no.
And you were obviously one of his advisors on various issues. Where else do you think he turned for information or advice on the various options open to his government when he was considering a policy? Was there a think tank or?
No, he's a man who invites opinion.
And was there a sort of key team of reformers within the government that
no.
was at the helm?
No, he's essentially, he's a reforms where, you see, home and there are two, three key establishments. One is finance. There is some finances are being done. At the same time, within the finance, there is a lot of reforms needed as far as the systems are concerned. That reform has not taken place. As also the other one is home, very big and etc. Some reform has taken place. But he does take, good bureaucrats are there, he listens to them. And also he listens to other people also. He doesn't have one particular people or something like that.
So could you talk a little bit about your experience at the in your second role that you mentioned from 2007 to early 2009 in the Employment Generation Commission? Could you tell us a little bit about how you came into that and what your mandate was?
Well, you see, I was doing quite a number of things in the earlier role. The tea industry was in crisis. And it's a lot of people were involved in tea, particularly laborers. And Assam's, that's the pride, the tea. So we prepared a tea industry report, a fairly large report, essentially. So that was that was done, and also I think Gogoi has implemented some of them. And then of course the fiscal reform, fiscal responsibility bill is an important piece of legislation which we have produced there, a number of other things. But in the meantime, and also the plan, development plan, etc., as we the 11th plan, which we came, preparation of the 11th plan. But in the meantime, that we realized that the most important thing is that finding jobs, finding something to do with this vast number of people. Now, let me tell you, as far as our human resources are concerned, I would say it is a failure on our part. I'm not blaming one particular chief minister or one regime of that over time. You see, about 50% of our children lives at the middle school. So only 50% goes to the upper regimes. And 75% drops at the high school level. So after the class 12, only about 17% goes to the 15% goes to the college level. At the college level, about 75% of them studies Bachelor of Arts, 12% for science, 6% for commerce, and 0.5% for any technical skills. So with this kind of a human resources, a nation cannot be built, a industry cannot be developed, a development really cannot take place. This is the big problem we had. So we then devised, and also because of these problems, they are unemployable. Therefore, various insurgent groups were able to recruit these people at a very marginal price and have been able to recruit them and fighting with the government systems. So why not find some avenues for these people After all, you cannot ask them to go back and study, but you have to find some avenues for these people. So therefore, essentially the focus of our employment generation mission is threefold. First, since about 87% of our people of Assam live in rural areas, and about 76% depend for their livelihood in agriculture. So why not focus your strategy on development of agriculture? So far our agriculture has been growing at a dismal pace, 2%, 2.5%, or sometimes 1% or something like that. So therefore our urge is to develop agriculture so that they can retain this bulk of the people there for the time being. And second one is give them skills, any skills, whatever skills they can absorb. After all, it will have to be on their absorptive capacity. It can be a plumber, it can be an electrician, it can be a mechanic, it can be an instrument operator, it can be mobile repair, it can be cycle repairing, it can be electrician, it can be computer repair, or any skills. Give them skills, skills, skills. If skills are there, people will not die of hunger. This is true. So therefore, give them skills. The third one is that and create an environment where the other industries will be able to come here. These are the three focus on that one. Systems have to be improved. Unless you improve the systems.
And do you think that this the lack of systemic change is likely to have an impact on the sustainability of the reforms that the government is engaged in right now?
I think so.
All right.
Thank you.
I think that covers. Is there anything else you would like to add in terms of?
Yeah, thank you.